You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Coming up on Total Access, The Locker Room.
I'm sitting here in the middle of the table with all y'all looking like I just gave all y'all the business, and I do it again. And I can remember them coaches sitting there like, all right, y'all, like y'all calm down, y'all calm down. And
I'm so y'all was getting into it.
Oh, getting into it. But that's when they knew, yeah, he different.
Welcome to NFL Total Access, The Locker Room. I'm Michael Robinson, and as always, joined by former head coach Brian Billick. Coach, what's going down?
Doing good today. Got an interesting one today, don't we?
Yes, we do. We're going to let you guys in on what players and coaches really talk about inside the locker room. Today, we're keeping things in-house with our very own 3-time Pro Bowler, ball-hawking cornerback D'Angelo Hall. And guys, he's going to let you guys in on exactly what makes this guy special. He is feisty all the time. He is always trying to compete, coach, and I think that's what made him great on the field.
Yeah, and it's an interesting time because we're talking about the postseason, but pre-draft time and the things you guys go through to prepare yourself, some of the really interesting stories about what takes place during that time period.
And here he is, our NFL Network colleague and one of the last shutdown cornerbacks of the National Football League, friend of the podcast, D'Angelo Hall. Big D Hall, welcome to the show, big dog.
What's going on, fellas? M-Rob, coach, how y'all doing?
We're doing good today. Doing
excellent. So you already know what time it is, man. Locker room story. Again, I have to remind you, none of the stories we put on TV, all right? This is the Total Access, The Locker Room podcast.
Yeah.
You got to give us something real, dog. What you got for us?
All right, well, you know, oddly enough, this topic was just fresh in my head because on TA, we were talking to Aaron Jones, Green Bay Packers running back, just got a new deal, congratulating him. And I told him, I said, hey, won't you tell Matt LaFleur to tell you that story about how D-Hall almost kicked this, you know what? And so Aaron Jones immediately, eyes perked up, and he was like, I said, yeah, I can't wait for you to tell him that story, so I'm going to tell y'all that story. And so back in the day, Matt LaFleur was, I think he was a tight ends coach or assistant. He was a QC doing something, you know, grunt work stuff. You know, you could tell he was a great mind. Him, Sean McVay was on this staff, Raheem Morris, young Aubrey Pleasant. They had some talented coaches. And, you know, Mike Shanahan was the lead guy. And Mike believed in practicing a certain type of way. And it was balls to the wall. I've been called in Mike's office before for not practicing hard enough. So I totally understand the standard by this point. But it was, you know, it was an OTA type of practice where, gosh, I want to say might even have been RG's rookie year because coach had us split up into 2 separate fields. So he had the 1 offense on 1 field going against kind of the younger defense. And then he had the 1 defense going against the younger offense.
Yep.
And we had a tight end, Logan Paulson. And Logan was a dirty work guy. You know, he wanted to put his hands on you, real special teamers type of guy. And, you know, at that point, I was playing a little safety. And so I walked myself down to the box thinking, you know, we're in shorts and T-shirts. I think we might have had helmets on. Yeah, we did have helmets on. We're in shorts, T-shirts, helmet. And Logan goes to block me. And I'm trying to get off, you know, kind of finesse, get off. And I'm like, you know, I can't get off. I'm
he
like,
grabbed you, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he grabs. I'm like, you know, all right. So next play, so I get beat him with speed, M-Rob. So I get past him, and he kind of grabs me and pulls me. And I'm like, hold up, bro. At that point, now I'm like, dude, you could get somebody hurt, you know, because now I'm the older, guy, right? So I'm like, hey, look, man, you can't pull me from the back like that. Well, my coach told me to. I said, well, who your coach? Who your coach?
No, you know, who your coach? Can't put that man out there like that. So,
he gave up in a minute.
Yeah, right there.
So he points to the floor, and I run up on the floor, and I said, you know what? At first, I ran up on Logan after he did it to me, right? I run up on Logan, and I start asking him these questions, right? So I had already ran up on one dude, kind of looking up, pointing to him, talking, you know, little man complex talking. And so once I get the answers from him in the middle of doing practice, right, I run up to the floor and I'm like, hey, dog, next time you tell him to grab me and block me like that, I ain't going to kick his ass. I'm going to kick your ass.
What?
And I mean, it was just, it was classic, dog.
Why would you tell a coach that, dog? What's going on, dude?
To the source.
And like, just like Coach said, you got to go to the source, man. I can't. Well, one, I didn't think I could win the fight with Logan.
I'm gonna find a smaller guy.
And two, at that point, somebody had to pay. Somebody was gonna pay at that point, and so I picked the smaller guy. But I love Matt LaFleur, man. He's a hell of a coach. But me and him, we always share that story and just laugh back and forth. He even tells, man, you remember that time you almost kicked my ass? Like, I wasn't funny then, but I do.
Hey, Coach, how would you have reacted to
as a coach?
Know, no, I'm talking about Coach. No, Coach, I always, have I you had told, a guy do something like that to you?
I've always told my assistants, man, don't ever put me in a position where I got to choose now, because you may not like that choice. You know? So you better deal with it. Okay, don't be looking to me like, hey, can you bail me out here? You know, so it was that one. I remember one time we had this week when I had Orlando Brown. You'll love this story.
Oh, yeah.
And this was after post Orlando Brown with the eye and Orlando, and I love him like a son. Orlando had a lot of voices going on in his head now. There was a lot going on in there. And Orlando was all about once you got his trust. So when he comes back to the team, I tell him, okay, Orlando, look, I love having you here. I love your passion, but I got to know that you're under control. So if something comes up, if I get involved and I come to you, you got to show me you're handling this. I got to know that you're in control. Coach, I got it. So we're out of training camp. And there's a fight breaks out and coaches are in there and whatever. Well, Orlando and the players all knew what Orlando was about. And he literally had two guys, one in each hand, holding them off the ground, you know, and Jim Coletto, my line coach, looks at me like, Brian, you gotta do something here. I can't control this. So I walk over to Orlando and I said, Orlando, this is that time. And he looks at me. And he drops the guys and he goes and he walks to the end of the practice field and just stays there for about 20 minutes.
He had to calm down.
But just showed me, okay, I can handle this.
I got you.
So he literally drops the guys and goes stands at the other end of the field. And the players looked at me like, oh, God, did you see what Coach do? Oh, man, Orlando listened to Coach, man. So from that point on, I had real street cred because, like, I could control Orlando Brown.
Yeah,
you control him, right? Yeah, he was a joy to coach. He was something. It was always something with Orlando.
Well, guys, as you guys know, we're getting into the draft prep stuff, right? And D-Hall, like, I know when you were coming out of Virginia Tech, right, we all knew you were a first-round pick. I mean, you know, the masses did. But how certain were you that you were a first-round pick? You know what I mean? I mean, obviously, you say the right stuff. But, you know, when you look at the man in the mirror, how'd you feel about obviously being a first-round pick and how'd your preparation get down?
Yeah. You know, I put all my kind of early underclassmen draft info stuff in, you know, to kind of just get a feel for what they were saying. And the grade actually came back second rounder. And, you know, at that time, I just, you know, I took a real honest look at the top corners that I felt like were going to be either seniors in that draft or underclassmen that were potentially leaving. And I really tried to be honest with myself and, you know, how fast am I compared to this guy? Mm-hmm. Can I actually really go play man-to-man versus this guy? Or can I get the ball better than this guy? Do I tackle better than this guy? And so, you know, I kind of in the back of my head, I thought I was a first-round draft pick. I didn't think I'd be a top 10 pick. You know, I felt like if I ran well and really showed scouts how fast I really was, that all the rest of the football stuff, all the rest of the DB, you know, backpedaling, technique work, can he tackle?
But you weren't worried about none of that stuff. You know,
I really wasn't worried about none of that. It was really, you know, I just wanted to show the scouts how fast I was because I knew in this league they put a premium on speed. Yeah. Before I saw Terrence Newman get drafted top five, I think, and he was the fastest corner. So that to me was the standard pretty much for me.
Did that second round grade scare you off? Did you almost think, maybe I shouldn't do that?
It did. I mean, it scared me. You know, it made me really, like I said, it really made me look in the mirror, you know. And had I looked in the mirror and saw two or three guys that I felt were really better than me, I probably would have went back to school because I was a young kid too. You know, I was 20 years old when I got drafted, went to college at 17. So I probably could have used another year to just mature. Yeah. You know, probably wasn't the best thing for me. And the next year, how about this Pac-Man Jones came out and went higher than me? I think he went 6. And I always said, dang, and I kind of like Tennessee. I would have vibed with Nashville. You know, had I stayed one more year, I always kind of sit back and think about that. You know, for me, it was about just competing. I knew how good I was. And I wanted to measure myself against everybody else. You know what I mean? Well,
the good news was that it motivated you then for these postseason workouts.
Yeah.
Where a lot of, if you're guaranteed, like I always, you know, dealing with guys and seeing, like you saw it with Alabama and some of the guys that didn't work out, that you know, that it's, yeah. I get it when they're kind of going, man, just look at the tape.
Yeah.
Do I really need to run for you? I mean, come on now.
Coach, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm going to tell you one story about when I was training. So, peep this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, I'm training at Athletes Performance in Tempe, Arizona. Beautiful facility with all these great players.
APL.
It was a receiver from Texas Tech. I want to say his name was Francis or something like that. I mean, he was a speedster. He ended up running the fastest.
That's the homie from the crib, man. Francis, man.
You
got the wrong guy. Yeah. My bad.
Francis is my homie. But yeah. His last name was Francis, but yeah. I'm going to have to go back and look him up. He ended up being, I think, a second or third round receiver in my draft, but he was known as the fastest dude in college football, right? And so he was there. And so I was like, I'm going to make sure every time we running, I'm beating him, right? And so that was my competition there. And then we had a top five receiver. Well, we had the number one receiver, which was Roy Williams from Texas, right? All world, everything. Right. He didn't even know my name when we got there, Coach. I promise you he didn't. When we left, he went 7, I went 8. Oh, absolutely, Coach. I ate his ass up every day. And then when I saw him in Detroit as a first-round pick, I made sure I went and got cookies and ate them again. And when he was in Dallas, I ate them some more. But, yeah, believe that. But those dudes were my measuring sticks, right? So I went there, people not knowing my name. But at the end, like I said, dudes were out partying, having a good time. Locked in. I knew what time workouts was, them tour days, because I knew like that was going to be my advantage. Like I never was a partier. I never got to do anything. I told you I was 17 when I went to college, 20 when I left. Like I really wasn't legally allowed to do much. And then, you know, my background as a kid, as a 13-year-old, I had a brother get murdered. And so like my mom and nightlife and all that wasn't an option. Mm-hmm. Like even as a 37-year-old man, and Rob, when I go home and hang out with my mom, I don't be out past a certain time. Like she knows. Sure. Yeah, exactly. That's just a mother's, you know, when someone's been through that, you know, you do things a little bit differently. And so, yeah. So for me, it was all about locking in and maximizing the most out of that experience. And that's why when I talk to young kids when they're training, I want to know, like, all right, you training here, but what you doing? Are you one of the cats that's out hanging out? Because you could easily get caught up in, you know, you got a little money in your pocket and you just aren't really taking advantage of the overall experience. And I think for me, I knew I wanted to get the most out of it all. And like I said, from and the dude name was Carlos Francis.
There you go. There you go.
Carlos Francis running on Texas Tech National Championship 4-100 team to Roy Williams, who was an all-everything in college that I went and tried to dog every rep from one-on-ones to competing in anything.
You had a rabbit down there, somebody to chase. And see, you know, I was down there with Tom Shaw down there in Disney. You know what I'm saying? He trained Prime and all of those things. And, you know, the guy that I was chasing was Devin Hester. He was in my draft class and he was fast. And we knew that he was the guy that everybody was looking at. And so every running drill, absolutely. I'm going to run with him. He was the fastest guy out there. I'm running with him. But, guys, I ain't going to lie to you, D-Hall. To your point, I wasn't a guy that went out much, too, especially leading up to my pro day, even though I was a quarterback of a major college program. So, I had my time out in them streets, guys. I had my time.
No doubt.
but getting ready for the pro day, man, it was tough for me. Because, like I tell everybody, if I would have came out 10, 15 years later, it would have been a totally different process for me. I would have been training exclusively at quarterback. Nobody would have even asked me to do anything else. Guys, it's crazy. I go out to my pro day. I run my 40. I do all my stuff, do all the movement drills. And I wanted to show them that I could play quarterback. So I made every throw. You know, I threw over 100 and something balls. Every throw, trained with some quarterback gurus before the process and everything. Then I stood in the middle of the field and asked, what else you guys want to see? I had a guy that wanted me to do backpedaling. He said, hey, I heard you had 20 interceptions in high school. Can you do some DB movement drills? Hey, D-Hall, I started backpedaling. I started opening up. My hips hurt, all that. And I hadn't even trained for it.
I hadn't even
trained for it, right?
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where my whole dream was to be in the National Football League, not necessarily be a quarterback. And I knew that I would have to show I would have to show teams that the more I could do, that was my value. Boom, after I did the DB drills, I had to do wide receiver drills after that. And then I did running back drills. You talk about somebody being tired as Oh, my goodness.
So what did you do? What did you do after that in your training? Did you train for all of it?
Yeah. I mean,
So what I did was I did start to adjust. I did, you know, all of my quarterback stuff in the morning after I lifted weights, right? After I did the weight room stuff, I started doing my quarterback stuff. In the evening, it was all what I call other skill position stuff, right? I was catching the football. I was doing running back drills. I didn't train for defensive back. That was one thing I probably wasn't willing to do, guys. I wasn't trying to go out there on them islands, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and start covering guys like that. That wasn't necessarily my thing. But I tell you guys, I wish I would have came out a little bit later, because just seeing the quarterbacks now and seeing the opportunities they're getting. I mean, you look at Trey Lance in this year's draft. I think if this was a normal draft, I'm not sure that kid comes out this year. But you see the pandemic, you see there is no combine, you see all of these different factors. He's like you, D-Hall, you like, I'm looking at the rest of the quarterbacks. This may be my year to come out. And so I always wonder, like, what would have happened if I would have gotten that chance to come out a little bit later, especially with all these movement quarterbacks getting an opportunity.
So hold up, M-Rob. So in the middle of trying to train to be drafted for a quarterback, you decide, all right, because they asked me to do this, I'm going to train for all this other stuff as well.
Absolutely. And guys, yes, I made it to the Pro Bowl at fullback, won a Super Bowl as a fullback. But hell, man, I wasn't no damn fullback, man. Hell no. I got moved to fullback with Mike Martz. Okay, so Mike Martz had halfbacks.
So how much did you weigh? How much did you weigh during this whole draft process? When you got your shot in the league, how much did you weigh?
About 220, 218, really? Something like that. Yeah, man. And then I played a couple of years behind Frank Gore. We got Mike Martz after We got Mike Martz with Coach Singletary getting the head coaching job. And I remember Mike Martz brought me in with Adam Gase. Adam Gase was like his little quality control special assistant guy. Mm-hmm. And Adam Gase was my personal coach every single day.
So he's getting me coached up.
Yeah, getting me coached up. Taught me how to run routes, taught me how to see the field like the quarterback is seeing it. And that's when I moved to fullback. And so when I got cut and got an opportunity to play with Seattle, that's what Pete said. He said, bro, I need you to block half of guys. You know what I'm saying? I need to throw the ball to my half, to my fullback.
That's just good evaluation of talent. We had I recruited John Lynch when he was at Stanford. John was a quarterback out of San Diego. Okay.
Really?
So we come in, and Denny Green, who I still say, God rest his soul, was the best evaluator of talent I've ever been around as a coach. So we got we recruit this John Lynch into Stanford as a quarterback. Danny goes, we're going to make him a safety. I'm going, oh, man, Denny's lost it, man. He's gone. This is a quarterback, Dan. We're going to make this case. There's something in this kid. He can be a good safety. So, okay. So we talked the kid into it. He was all into it. And we're all going, Dad, this kid's going to get the very first practice. He goes out, doesn't know what the hell he's doing. We had a big fullback named Tommy Vardell. Remember touchdown Tommy Vardell?
Yeah, I remember that name.
Big, physical. Yeah. So we got a live action. John Lynch comes screaming down. As we all know, this is pre knowing what John Lynch, and just de-cleats him, blows him up, ass over elbow backwards. Very first play, and we're going, damn, Danny, we don't know what you saw, but you.
Yeah, but it worked. You're right.
Yeah,
it
so was there. You know, you have the right guys saying, look, there's a set of skills here. So you owe Mark Martz a debt of gratitude.
So you've been a head coach, obviously, right? So you know the pre-draft evaluation process. Talk to us about what's that like as a head coach? Because, you know, us as players, and you know that, you know the process as a player. Us as players, I ain't going to say it's a meat market, but it's a lot of eyes looking at you, a lot of evaluation, I've been told that, you know, I was fat, all of those things, depending on who likes you. You know what I'm saying? But what's it like from a head coaching perspective?
Well, and as a coach, it's tough because you've gone through a long season. Now you've got to convert very quickly. And you've got to be conversant with a bunch of guys. So you look at tape and the scouts get you going. And the scouts hate it because we go to the combine, we go to the personal workouts, and we fall in love with guys. Because we go in and we have a very limited view, right? But we see the athleticism, or we get to know the players a little bit. So there's a wide, you know, there's a large group of players, but you tend to get real focused real quick on guys that you really, really like. And that's hard. It's hard on the scouts. And you got to be careful as a coach because you fall in love with a guy in shorts. I always looked at it was, I always told the guys, the combine and the pro workouts they need to send you back to the tape. That's the key. If I like the guy on tape and I see the guy work out and I like it and they both check out, great, good to go, got to move on. The problem is I saw the guy on tape, I liked him, and then I see him in person going, or vice versa. I don't like him on tape, but then you see him and you go, damn, this guy is an athlete. So, send me back to the tape to relook at, to verify either I missed on the tape or I'm missing on this, but send me back to the tape. Do something to make me go back and look at the tape.
So coach, can the tape ultimately, the tape is what's going to get you drafted though, right? Like say the tape looks great, but then you see him, you're like, but the tape looks great.
Ultimately, though, if you're going to err on the side of tape. Because if I go with the workout, you know, you're really betting on, okay, you got to convince. What my daughter used the term, because she's in HR for corporation, and they all have algorithms of how they identify people. She goes, you got to negotiate the algorithm, meaning, okay, the facts tell you this. My eyes tell me this. But you got to negotiate with it going, okay, what makes me think this guy is better than what I'm seeing? Is he immature? Is he just raw? Does he have a big upside? That's fine. Or am I just kidding myself and going, okay, the guy's pretty in shorts, but man, I just don't see it on tape. And more often than not, it doesn't work out.
Or coach,
you fall in love with the shorts. You got to, the tape's got to be, if you know in your heart the tape tells me this guy can't play, you gotta believe that.
What about when you actually talk to the guy, like pre-draft visits? You know what I'm saying? What if the tape says draft him? You know, I see him work out. It's like I go to his pro day. It's draft him. But I have a conversation with him, and I'm like,
You know what Chris Rock says? You're meeting the representative. Yeah, you go out on first date. You're not dating the girl. You're dating her representative. Okay. Well, what I like to do, and this is what I did at the pro workouts more than anything, particularly when I had positions. So the workout's fine. Mm-hmm. But I would usually stick around and take the guy to dinner or something because I wanted to see how he acted and how people acted around him. How did he treat the waitress? How did he treat the doorman or the guy parking the car? How did people react to him, even in his environment? Was the guy a big timer? Or was he nice to people and people responded to him the same way? I wanted to find out what kind of person he was. It was okay if he was a turd, because he just had that bravado. I just wanted to know that.
Yeah, but Coach, how do you manage the personalities there? Like, you may have a scout that likes the kid, right? And maybe you know something about the scout personality-wise that's the reason why you like him. Maybe that scout has got a little something with him, and that's why you like him. But you meet the kid, and you're like, he may not be well in this locker room. You know what I'm saying? How do you negotiate
and,
that?
And it's hard because you're talking about young kids that are immature. I always say young and stupid is one word. It is. We're all young and stupid, right? And so is this kid just uncomfortable with dealing with somebody in this situation? Therefore that he comes off a little awkward or tries to puff up and be a little more than he is, and he doesn't come off well. A lot of it too is you rely on your, scouts have a relationship with coaches, but you usually knew somebody on just about every staff that as a coach, you could talk coach to coach, go, hey, tell me about this kid. And a lot of times you get on, oh, look, don't be fooled by the fact he's a good kid. Or, okay, coach, this guy's, I tell you better be careful because he's going to be in the principal's office a whole lot. As long as you know that going in, you know. So, you really have to rely on that evaluation.
Hey, D, you had some pre-draft visits that you remember that was like, I really like this place. Or did you have a draft visit with Atlanta and that you knew they were going to draft you?
Well, I had a couple really dope pre-draft visits, and I say pretty dope because as a dude who coming out of high school, I only took one visit. I committed to Virginia Tech as a junior, and was encouraged not to go see anybody else. Right? Why would you?
That's what
go
they do. They did the
else?
Same thing to me.
And so I didn't. Being young and naive, I didn't. And so throughout the draft process to have a team fly me up to New York, and it was just super dope. So I'm gonna give y'all a couple different stories. And so one story, I'm up in New York at the Jets facility, and I'm in, I'm looking around and the facility's super dope. But the way the Jets did it, they brought in like 30 prospects all together.
All that
and the 30 of us was pretty much all DBs, right? And so, there I got to meet Dante Robinson, who was a young dude from South Carolina, transitioning from kind of safety to corner, kind of a no name like myself. So me and him kind of hit it off. We were, smaller in stature corners, but super edgy, played real physical type of games. And so, me and him kind of hit it off, bonded, became instant friends, and have stayed in contact ever since. Then I go to Washington for a visit, and I'm there with Sean Taylor, Kellen Winslow, Jonathan Vilma, DJ Williams, and myself. And they four Miami Hurricanes, right? And me. I'm the lone VTech. And for those who don't know, we played in the Big East back in the day when it was VTech Miami. That was a rivalry. And we knew Miami got the best players, got the best athletes hands down. But my argument to all them dudes was always like, I was always different. Like, I could have went to Miami. I could have went to Florida State. Yep. I wanted to stay here in state and show y'all what we about. And by doing that, I'm sitting here in the middle of the table with all y'all looking like I just gave all y'all the business and I do it again. And I can remember the coaches sitting there like, all right, y'all, like y'all calm down. Y'all calm down. And
I'm so y'all was getting like, into it.
Oh, yeah. Getting into it.
Dog.
Like, getting into it. But that's when they knew, yeah, he different. You know what I mean?
Y'all finna get like, paid and y'all in there arguing, huh?
Coach, the representative was there, but you best believe the dude who had to back up the representative on the field, he was there too. And so, I wasn't having it. And that was the year, that I was talking trash about Miami and we beat the snot out of them. I'm taking the ball out of Cat's hands, you know what I mean? So that was a game that I felt like, in that rivalry, we dominated a way more talented football team than us. I talked bad about them, and they had seven first rounders that year. And so, and I thought the team with Ed Reed and all those guys were the better team. And I guess I was wrong.
The 2001 team. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, 2001 team.
You know what I'm saying? Hey, Coach, I think we know what made D. Hall very special on the field. That dude feisty.
No question.
Every step of the way, he competing. D. Hall, thank you for coming by the podcast, man. You can come by anytime you want to. You had great perspective, and that's going to do it for this week's episode. Coach, we'll see you next week. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access, The Locker Room. For more insight with The Locker Room Point of View, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.